Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open in the UK. I can't quite believe that the US Open is already next month. It's only day two of Wimbledon, and it is a day, David Law, who sits alongside me, Catherine Whittaker. We've both been working for BBC Radio today. It is a day, David, when your predictions in particular have taken another absolute battering.
All right. I mean, it's not a very nice way to start day two podcast, is it? I mean, we could have talked about Nadal or something nice.
No, but what we have to talk about is Petra Kvitova, who was my pick for the title as well. I'm fortunate enough that I didn't pick Sloane Stephens to face her in the final. But let's get this out there. I picked Petra Kvitova, the Birmingham champion for the title. She has just gone out to Alexandra Šašnjević in three sets. A 6-love third set in that one over on court number one, David. Šašnjević is a good player. She requires some beating. She was always going to require some beating today. But Kvitova, David. I mean, she strategically pulled out ahead of her second round match in Eastbourne, I believe. I don't think the hamstring issue that she cited as her reason for that, I believe that was, you know, and she has every right to do so, I believe that she'd just got the matches she needed, she got a title. I don't think there was anything physically wrong with her today. I think she just wasn't on, and you have to be on against Šašnjević.
Yeah, especially playing the way Šašnjević was today. I mean, you could kind of tell, even though I wasn't watching every ball of that because I was on the Nadal match on centre court, but just looking at the scoreboard at 3-all in the first set, there were games going juice, advantage, and Kvitova was just sort of holding on. And matches that she's in like that, I mean, she does win a lot of three-set matches, but when she's at her best, you don't get three-set matches because she just destroys players. I mean, she has the sort of game that can overwhelm, and she has a game that if she was absolutely on a game, I think she would overwhelm Alexandra Šašnjević as well. But sitting there next to Pat Cash in the commentary box today on the Nadal match, he did say at about 1-all in the first set that Šašnjević is a really good player. He's obviously had experience of coaching against her, I would imagine, with Coco Vandeweghe, or at least being around her game. She had that run to the final in Brisbane at the start of the year, and she was excellent there. She just doesn't give you anything, and she will fight, and she's super fit, and she's tenacious. But it's a terrible loss for Petra Kvitova. Assuming she is fully fit from whatever, as you say, she pulled out of Eastbourne with, you know, like I say, she was the pick for a few people for the title. She certainly was mine because I think she's probably the best player in the draw when on a game. Maybe you could say Serena Williams is even better, but we certainly don't expect Serena to be at full throttle right now. That's a real upset. And as you say, 6-love final set. It's not dissimilar in that way to Stevens yesterday. And it just throws the thing even more wide open.
It does. It's a huge upset. For me, bigger than the upset, even though she's lower in seeding, for me, bigger than the upset of Sloane Stephens yesterday and Elena Svitolina, who went out late last night after we recorded the podcast. For me, this is this is a bigger upset.
Yeah, it is.
It's pretty seismic, really. In a very wide open women's draw, she was the name I'm defending us here, David. She was the name I'd heard picked out more than any other. It's still a very wide range of names, but she was probably as close to a sort of favourite in this women's draw as there was.
My worst run since when Juan Martín Del Potro lost in the first round in the Australian Open about 4 years ago, and I picked him as the champion.
Who's in your men's final, David? Who do you need to come
Marin
through?
Marin Cilic and Rafael Nadal.
Well,
please don't let me down.
Well, Rafael Nadal was brilliant today against little Dudi Seller, whose commentary I heard of yours, and before they'd even struck a ball, David, you were knocking 3 inches off poor old Dudi's height. As listed in the ATP handbook.
Yeah, I believe in accuracy. And that thing was listing Dudi Seller at 5'9". Sorry. but, you know, whilst I don't have a tape measure that could fully confirm Dudi's latest height, he ain't 5'9".
What do you mean latest height? I don't think he's done any growing for a while.
I don't know. I still think I've got a bit of growing in me.
Well, you're adding insult to injury for poor Dudi, because he was on the receiving end of a 6'3", 6'3", 6'2". Battering.
He was. And he played well. He played well, did Dudi Seller. I mean, when you hear that sort of scoreline, you think, well, how? But he was holding his own. He was hitting. He's a lovely shot maker. I mean, given his frame, he has to time the ball incredibly well. And he was middling. He has a single-handed backhand and he middles it. And he sort of parries it in a way like a cricketer who's a sweet striker. So the ball just pings off the strings without spin on it. It just zooms over the net and can push anybody around. But Nadal's movement, and it just nullified that. But what struck me most of all about Nadal was he got to a point where it was quite obvious he was going to win, and he could have won, frankly, playing his normal clay court game from back with the line judges. But in the latter half of the third set, he stopped trying to win the match like that, and he started to hit out and go for shots that were not really percentage plays normally for Rafael Nadal. And to me, it was all designed to try to see where he's at, extend his limits, find out how far he can push himself on grass, because he'll believe that that's what he needs to do if he's going to actually make a deep run here and end up finding a way against someone like Federer.
Extra pressure on his shoulders now that you've picked him for the final and you so desperately need the points in the predictions challenge. Before him, David, on the centre court, you also commentated on Garbiñe Muguruza, who beat Naomi Brody of British fame, 6-2, 7-5. She was good today, Muguruza, wasn't she? Brody refusing to lie down in that second set. You were particularly commenting on how little she gave away in her post-match interview. She doesn't give anything away,
no,
does she?
And actually, we were talking afterwards about Marion Bartoli, who was with us for that match, was saying, well, she never does. And I think Marion's probably had some experiences of trying to interview Muguruza at the French Open and not getting much back. My mind goes back, say, 3 years ago when Muguruza first reached the final here, and she wasn't like that at all. She was so open. She was charming in press conferences and interviews, just really interesting. And I'm sure at some point around there she probably got burnt a little bit by some kind of media coverage or something that made her think, you know what, I'm going to pull the shutters up and just do what I have to do in these situations. I'm not going to worry about cultivating my image or anything like that. I'm just going to be a professional because I want the best results. I think it's a shame because she's clearly got so much to offer as a personality, and it would be lovely to get to know her more. I don't blame her, though, really. You know, if you want to be the best you can be, I guess you find your own way, but there's obviously a lot more there than meets the eye. In terms of her game today, I didn't think she was that good,
no,
to be honest. No, I mean, she was really nervous. She was defending the title here for the first time, opening centre court play on Tuesday. I think Brody's not in the greatest form she's ever been in, so she was miss-hitting quite a bit. But then in the second set, she kind of just hung around, and you could see the nerves in Muguruza. And we interviewed Brody live on air after the match, and I asked her, did Muguruza seem nervous to you? And she said she really did. You know, it was, and I dare say that will go as the week goes on. I think that this first hurdle was the big one.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I always speak to the guys from Spanish Eurosport whenever I'm at a slam for Eurosport about their impressions of Muguruza, because I find her a tough nut to crack these days, exactly as you say. She wasn't always, but she has rather put the shutters down. And they say they find it really interesting. She always says, when she gets those sort of quiz-type interviews, what would you be if you weren't a tennis player? She always says actress. And they say she's a great actress. And whether that's a ploy to a sort of defence mechanism, to minimise pressure, whatever it is, they think, you know, she is acting a lot of the time. Acting like...
I wonder why.
You know, that strut when she walks on court, that slightly too cool for school thing, a touch of the Nick Kyrgios maybe, you know, trying to make out like she doesn't care as much as she does to alleviate some of the pressure.
Something very interesting that Leighton Hewitt said in the interview we did a few weeks ago, and one bit that we didn't include in the interview, because I know Charlie Eccleshare of The Telegraph wanted to write a specific piece about this for Wimbledon, which he did run a day or so ago, so I can tell you about it now. He said, Leighton Hewitt, that he worked an awful lot on that side of his game, on his presence, on the way he carried himself, on trying to look taller than he really is and bigger than he really is and more attitude than he really has, so that players would be intimidated by him. He wanted players to be intimidated, the opponent. He said everything sends a message. Everything you do in the locker room, the way you carry yourself, you must not be somebody that can be pushed around. And you can imagine players like Sharapova have made a career out of that. Serena Williams, aside from being the best tennis player in the world, is also just a frightening force, because she carries herself in a way that owns a court. I imagine owns a locker room. And Muguruza has had to do her bit on those lines as well.
I'll tell you somebody else who's really worked on that in the last, well, year, but particularly 9 months. And I think Fraser Rosengren and Kjetil Vong's just walked past us and given us a double-handed wave.
Yes. You know.
Very nice too.
Very.
Is Kyle Edmund, David.
Yes.
Because I think this time a year ago even, he probably walked into a locker room with, you know, the big names in it, a Roger Federer, a Nadal, a Djokovic, and probably had his head a bit low and shuffled along and thought, you know, I don't quite belong here yet. But I think now, I don't think he struts around the place in a towel, you know, but I think he sticks his chin in the air and puffs his chest out and goes, yep, yeah, I feel all right here.
He's owning it, isn't he?
He is owning it. And he won today, incidentally, 2-3 and 5 over Alex Bolt of Australia, who's a good story in himself. He's from Adelaide, I believe. He's from the countryside in... where's Adelaide? South Australia?
Probably.
I think it's in South Australia.
Sorry, everybody from Australia.
Yeah, he's from the countryside. I was speaking to Mark Woodford about him today, because he also is from Adelaide, and he was telling me about the big distinction between being a country boy and being a city boy in South Australia. He said he's sort of from Adelaide, but he's not really from Adelaide. He's from the country. And a couple of years ago, he gave up on tennis. He was working as a fencer, but not a, you know...
Not like, one of the sword ones.
Not a swordsman, a man that does fences.
One of those builds.
Mark thought he was a bricky. But anyway, erecting some kind of structure.
He's
is what he was doing a couple of years ago. And then apparently Leighton Hewitt was very instrumental in encouraging him to come back to tennis. Leighton Hewitt, also from Adelaide, of course. And Mark lost today, but he had a good run in qualies, didn't he? Beat Kokkinakis in the last round. And I think there is confidence that he could be a top 50 player. Mm. So that's a good win for Kyle Edmund.
Got a chance again to speak to Alex Bolt straight afterwards live on air. And aside from asking about his route to getting back into tennis, and as he said, you know, I just got disillusioned with it all and then came back to it, and I'm really glad I have now. But I asked him what it was like facing Kyle Edmund, because, you know, we're obviously looking at him from a British perspective a lot now, because Andy Murray's not here. Konta on the women's side is carrying the hopes, really, although Katie Bolter looks like she's just about got a good win to join her good friend Katie Swan from a British perspective. But all eyes really are going to be on Kyle Edmund, aren't they, in many ways, if he starts getting a run going. And I asked Alex Bolt, what was it like facing him? You know, how did you think he looked? And he said he came out absolutely steaming, you know, going for it. And it reminded me of the debate that we had earlier on at the start of the coverage on Five Live today with Greg Rozetsky. We were talking to him about the progress of Kyle Edmund, and I put to Greg that Tim Henman had written that Kyle Edmund just needs to go for it in matches. He needs to stop worrying too much about waiting for opportunities. He just needs to let rip on that forehand as soon as possible in every rally and impose himself. Greg disagreed. He felt as though, you know, you have to work your way into points. You have to improve incrementally those little areas of weakness. He believes that particularly on the return in order to give himself those opportunities. But I do find that increasingly Edmund looks like he's just taking charge of matches, and that suggests confidence and an ability to carry himself as a British number one.
Only his second ever win at Wimbledon, so not one to be taken for granted. He's never really done anything here. I think court one, the biggest court he's ever played on here. Well
done,
Kyle.
Who's he got next?
While you look that up, David, I'm going to stay on the Aussie theme. And I'm going to mention the fact that Alex Zverev got a win over James Duckworth. That was on court number 2-7-5, 6-2, 6-love. Looked to be in a bit of a match in the first set, so Zverev moving through the gears. Now, the match that I was covering out on court 12, I actually covered two Aussies today. I covered Ash Barty, who beat Stephanie Vogeler 7-5-6-3, I believe. And, speaking of nerves, she looked nervous in that first set, David. When I say pressure and expectation, I think there is some of that on Ash Barty's shoulders because of how good a grass court player she is and how well she's played in the lead up here. I think more, if not as many, if not more grass court wins than anybody else. She, of course, won the title in Nottingham. I think it's a stretch to say that she's an outside bet for the title. It's not ridiculous given some of the results there have been in women's tennis, but nobody wants to play her, that is for sure. Absolutely nobody wants to play Ash Barty. She lurks in Muguruza's portion of the draw. And, she'd be a match for anyone, I think.
She makes players hit shots they just don't want to be hitting over and over again.
Her slice. If you're out there and you're thinking, I'd really like to improve my slice, just watch Ash Barty hit her backhand slice over and over again. Because I believe it's perfection.
Really?
Yeah, you need slice is not something you're in need of, David. You need some more topspin.
Okay, who can I go to for that? Rafael Nadal.
Well, Nick Kyrgios. Nick Kyrgios only on the forehand side, the backhand flat as a pancake. But right. Nick Kyrgios came through in four sets over Denis Istomin. It was a bizarre Nick Kyrgios match, David.
You really mean that?
Completely uneventful. Well, actually, I say that there was a poor ball girl hit in the arm by 135 mile per hour Kyrgios first serve.
Ooh, nasty.
She ran off crying. I believe she's okay. I'm sure there'll be some sort of presentation of flowers or something.
He was quite nice, customary. Wasn't he? About
he was delightful, absolutely delightful. It was, in fact, a very big point. He was saving break point in the fourth set, 30-40. I think it was 3-4. So it was a very, very big point. But yeah, that was probably the biggest single event of the match. I mean, Kyrgios was doing a little bit of sort of shrugging and shaking his head, but no histrionics. I think there was one sort of very vague attempt at a tweener.
Couldn't even be bothered.
I mean, there were 42 aces. 42 right. aces. That was the story of the match. Istomin was decent. But I think it was a Nick Kyrgios that is attempting to knuckle down. I think it's a Nick Kyrgios that's gone, hang on a second, I'm 15 seed. I practically skipped the clay court season to give the grass my all. Maybe I'm okay with, you know, leaving it all out there and saying I'm going to try and win this. But
how
then,
many times have we said this?
I know, but it was so different. It was almost flat, and I think it was a performance that added weight to your argument, David, that he needs to do that stuff to fire himself up. There's obviously a balance. You don't want to see him doing it too much. You don't want to see him tanking or being unpleasant to umpires or any of that stuff. There's obviously a line with him, but I do think he requires a certain amount of it to fire himself up, because it was flat today.
Nick Kyrgios will play against Robin Haase in the next round of the Netherlands. I mean, he's quite a dangerous player and a fella that you never quite know what you're going to get.
Who does Kyle Edmund play?
Hold on a minute. Can I just say, this is too delicious for delaying. If Kyrgios wins that match, he could end up playing against Bernard Tomic.
Who won today?
who won today? Although Kei Nishikori is in that section as well, so that's the scheduled seeded one. But yeah, Kyle Edmund is up against Bradley Klan of the United States in the next round.
I would call that a good draw.
It's a good draw, and if he gets through that, Edmund, and this is what Greg Rozetsky is predicting will happen, he would face most likely play Novak Djokovic,
who is on court as we speak, leads 3-2 with the break in the first set against Tennis Sangren. Also on court at the moment, the world number one Simona Halep leads by a set and a break, 3-2 in the second over Karumi Nara. So if something drastic happens there, we might come back for an addendum to this podcast, but we're predicting that nothing drastic will.
We want to get away for the football.
We may or may not want to go and watch the football, but
do you want a prediction for that?
No, I'll tell you what. Definitely do not.
I think Rich England would definitely lose.
Maria Sharapova is playing on court number 2 at the moment. How do you think she feels about that?
Probably not best pleased, is my prediction.
Court number 2. She's on serve in the first set against, Victoria Diachenko? Vitalia Diachenko.
Okay.
I don't think Maria Sharapova will enjoy being on court number 2 at all.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
What else have we had today? Katie Bolter, I think, she was certainly in a winning position against Veronica Cepeda-Roig on court number 14 when we started recording. That is a good draw,
I mean, look,
isn't it? That's a good draw. Yes, Cepeda-Roig hates the grass.
There's no question that that is a good draw. However, we've seen other British players today, and we talked about it yesterday, the fact that Katie Swan got her straightforward win in the end after watching Harriet Dart, you know, heroically but ultimately unsuccessfully go out of this tournament. Katie Bolter has followed Jay Clark onto the court, who's been deep in a fifth set and performed admirably against Ernest Gulbis, and really, you know, quite unlucky Clark not to get the win in the end. I mean, he stuck with Gulbis all the way through and just missed out 6-4 in the fifth. We've seen other matches like that. Gabby Taylor played against Eugenie Bouchard.
Oh, that was a weird match,
I mean,
wasn't it?
She withstood a love 6 first set, did Taylor, ended up losing 6-3 in the third, so she performed well. But Bolter has gone out there and just got the job done, and I think that's really impressive, assuming she has got the job done. And I'm just having a quick look down the scores here to make sure.
You double check that, David. Well, I tell you about Jake.
Hold
Carter.
On, she hasn't. It's it's once at all. It's turned around. So she lost.
She's gone out there and she hasn't got the job done yet.
Not yet. 7-5 down is Katie Bolter in the second set, and she's break point down in the third at one game all.
Live updates here on this recorded tennis podcast that you'll be listening to in about 12 hours.
So how do I sum that up now? Then, I mean, you know, she's blown it. That's a bit harsh, isn't it? But anyway, I don't know because I haven't been able to watch it.
Joe Conta, David, that is a match that is finished. That,
let us know.
We should probably stick to finished tennis
at
matches.
At Tennis Podcast, did Katie Bolter blow it? Was her opponent amazing? You tell us.
7-5, 7-6, Joe Conta. Now, she had the opportunity to clinch that first set. I think she served for it 5-3.
Yes.
Got taken to a tie break. Now, I didn't watch much of this, but I did have a good chat with Sarah Orchard and Naomi Cavaday, who were covering it for 5 Live. And they weren't that convinced by Joe Conta.
No. I mean, listening
she got the job done, but
Naomi Cavaday was saying, you know, full credit to her because she's found a way to get this win, and I think it's a really big win. I hope for her sake that it means that she uses it as a platform, that it gives her confidence, and she's actually able to free herself up and play the sort of tennis she's able to. But at the very least, it felt like a big win because, I mean, she's 24 in the world right now. A year ago, she was 7 in the world. And she's got semi-final points to defend here. So she's going down probably another 10, 15, 20 places after this tournament, maybe more. I don't know exactly if she doesn't win that match. You know?
If she would have gone down to approximately 44, 45
really?
In the world had she lost
wow.
today, yeah, depending on other results.
Which is, you know, you're now talking a pretty dramatic drop in ranking, which is then catching up all those results that we've talked about over the last year. But just feel as though she needed this because she needs to be able to get herself back out on the centre court and be the centre of attention and feel good and start getting some wins.
Well, I think being centre of attention is actually the last thing she needs, David. I think being on court two was good for her today. I think certainly for the early rounds.
Good for the first
presuming
round.
There are early rounds,
yeah.
Rounds plural. I think being a bit away from the spotlight is good. You know, I spoke to Sam Smith for a feature for BBC TV about Conta yesterday, and she was so insightful about her being an introvert and you know everything that entails. Because there's a lot of misunderstanding of introversion. It just means that being around people and having attention and all of that, it doesn't mean that you don't like it. It just means it saps your energy.
Which one am I?
I don't know, actually, David.
Okay.
It is all about where you get your energy from. Do you
right.
feel like when you have a great night out with friends,
chocolate?
Do
usually.
You feel tired at the end of it, or do you feel like you're recharging during it?
Oh dear.
See, an introvert can very much enjoy. For example, I think I'm an introvert.
Right.
But I know I'm an introvert.
Okay.
I very much enjoy a night out with people. It's not that I don't enjoy the company of others, but at the end of it, I feel tired. I feel like it has sapped my energy.
Right. Okay, I don't know which one I am. I'm going to have to give this some thought. I've never thought about it before. I thought an introvert and an extrovert was something completely different. So I'm learning things, Tennis Podcast.
Anyway, Joe Conta's an introvert.
And her next round opponent is Dominika Szybulkova.
Well, who has a big point to prove.
Is she an introvert?
I don't think so.
No. She puts those pictures of herself in the lifts.
Lift selfies.
Yeah. But maybe she gets tired after a night
out.
Well,
yeah, exactly. You can't necessarily judge who's an introvert and who's not. So... yeah, but anyway, David, we have very much digressed, and there's a football game to watch.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
She plays Dominika Szybulkova next, who has this big point to prove because she was the player that got bumped out of the seedings by Serena Williams.
It's
and she
be
had
intense.
Big things to say about that. She didn't think it was right, she didn't think it was fair, and I can very much understand why she felt that way because she is the one person most effective. It's to the benefit of lots of other people. To benefit of all the other seeds that were guaranteed not to meet her in the first round, and she's the one that's taken the hit. She beat Lise Cornet today. That's not the easiest of first round draws either.
No.
Beat Lise Cornet, and I don't know. I think that's really tough for introvert Joe Conta. I think that's tricky, and it's going to be on. I reckon they'll put that on court one.
Yeah, I think
that's
you're probably
guess.
Right. At Tennis Podcast, get your predictions in. We love predictions on this show.
Anyway, I didn't even get to my Sam Smith story.
What was
I
it again?
I got diverted by trying to diagnose you as an introvert or extrovert.
Okay, what was your story?
Her story was recounted on behalf of Joe about reaching the semi-finals here last year. At some point along her run, she went into her local supermarket and she saw herself on the front page of all the papers, and she just completely freaked out. She just ran out of the supermarket and couldn't cope with it. Almost had what I would potentially describe as a panic attack about it.
Oh,
you know, and I can very much sympathise with that. But what Chris Evert has had to say about her, big interview that Chris Evert did, is that she probably just doesn't have the personality type to be a top player. She might get back into the top 10, but the fact is she looked so tense out there on court two today. And you could see what you described with Grigor Dimitrov, you know, the gripping the racket really hard. Generally speaking, Chris Evert points out, top players, world number ones, etc., they aren't like that. They aren't of that personality type.
Yes.
You know, so we have an order of play, David.
Isn't
that's what you've just put in front of me.
I do find the mental side of sport absolutely intriguing, and especially because we're not players. It would be so interesting to know how you would react under this extreme pressure. I do feel for them at times. They're so exposed. It's a great sport, but my goodness.
We are far too guilty often of expecting them to be superhuman. And you know, I think probably the likes of Federer, Nadal and Serena have a lot to answer for there, because we take their extraordinariness for granted. A few other results before I update you on the order of play, which has just hit the presses. Dominic Thiem retired against Marcus Baghdatis. He was trailing two sets and a break. Del Potro won today against Peter Goyovchik. Angelique Kerber beat Vera Zvonareva. Blast from the past there.
Yeah. Former finalist.
Kerber was very good. David Goffin lost. What else did we have? Jay Clark lost in five sets.
Britwatch. He did a good job. That was a good performance from him.
And he'll learn lots from it.
Mm.
I know it's tough losing in five sets, and I know it's a cliche, but he does seem like the sort of guy that will take a lot from that. Any other business, David, before I update us all? Misha Zverev, David, lost.
Did he?
The champion of Eastbourne.
That's a shame.
In straight sets to Pierre-Hugues Herbert.
Well, I do like Pierre, but I mean, I would have loved to see Zverev have a go at Nadal.
That's
on these
shocker,
courts.
That's a shocker, isn't it? Yeah, after winning Eastbourne.
A bit like Borna Church losing. So come on, let's have
maybe
this order of play.
Maybe he's a bit tired. Order of play. Karolina Pliskova against Victoria Azarenka, first on centre.
Ooh,
I approve.
A good one. Yeah, I want to watch that.
Roger Federer. Oh, he's on centre again.
Oh, well, there you are.
Yeah,
what
Lucas Lachko is his opponent. And Victoria Tomova. I have to say, I don't know much about her. From Bulgaria, takes on Serena Williams. That is on third on centre. Court one sees Venus against Alexandra Dulgeru, who Venus couldn't recall ever having played in a press conference yesterday. Ekaterina Makarova takes on Wozniacki, and then it's Cilic and Pella.
Can I just say, we need to keep an eye on this, because this is 3 days in a row now where it has been proper equality between the genders on these two main show courts. If you add them all up, actually, I think after tomorrow, there have been more women's matches on the main two show courts overall than there have men's. I think that is a significant shift.
Bizarre, though, given how staunchly the club have been defending the imbalance attitude up until now. But you're absolutely right.
We'll just toss it up. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. I don't know why they wouldn't make a song and dance about the fact that they're doing it and say, yeah.
Not really their style, is it? But let's keep an eye on it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, hang on. They've made a song and dance about the fact that they haven't wanted to
do
it.
No, but let's keep an eye on it.
We're keeping an eye on it. Milman against Raonic. What else have we got? Katie Swan on court three, up first against Mihaila Buzanescu. Vavrinka, court number three. Tatiana Maria, she was the one that beats Vitalina. Who are we going to lose from our predictions tomorrow, David?
I don't want to talk about it. I'm sick to my stomach about it all.
So long as you don't lose Marin Cilic tomorrow, David.
Can I pull out or something, injured? I mean, I've got a mental injury that stops me being able to predict.
There we go. David Law is out of Wimbledon. That's our headline in The Telegraph tomorrow. We've been The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open in the UK. The US Open, which I can't believe actually takes place next month. David and I will be back tomorrow on day three of Wimbledon. And just a reminder that, as always, we're brought to you in association with La Manga Club, with our three executive producers, TennisBalls.com, Melanie Bowes and Triple S. And Charlie the Ferret. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.